This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Comté Cheese Association. Comté, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at comté-usa.com. That's comté-usa.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're exploring the intersection between food, agriculture, and competition. Learn how a chicken raising contest in the 1940s led to the poultry industry we have today.
And they were going to run a contest and try and develop what they would call the chicken of tomorrow.
We'll also venture into the world of agricultural video games, where a new set of tractors is making a lot of fans happy.
The biggest addition to 19 was the John Deere's. That's what everyone was hyped for.
And we pay a visit to a group of Indian restaurants that aren't on the friendliest of terms.
Usually they wait for my restaurant, but after a long wait, they go to next door or downstairs. But this is how they do business. They completely copy whatever we do.
Embrace your competitive spirit and be the first to listen to new Meat and Three episodes by subscribing now. That's Meat plus sign THREE, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, this is Diane Stemple on Cutting the Curd on Heritage Radio Network. Today I have the pleasure of interviewing Janet Fletcher, cheese author, about her new gigantic book called Wine Country Table. Welcome, Janet.
Thanks, Diane. Yeah, it really is an upper body workout, that book. It's pretty heavy.
Yeah, it's nice to have you back on the show.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
You're very welcome. So this is one big book with amazing pictures. Its subtitle is With Recipes That Celebrate California's Sustainable Harvest. So first, how did you approach this project? Did they come to you or did you go to them?
Well, I've had a book like this in mind for a long time. Mm-hmm. I've been writing about food for 35 years in California, in the Bay Area, and have written a lot about produce and farmers markets and growers, and that's always just been something I love writing about. Mm-hmm. And wine, of course. I'm married to a winemaker. But I never got to do it until I was approached to do it with this idea to do a book about sustainability and about California's leadership in that realm, both winemakers, wine growers, and the fruits and vegetables that we grow. So many of our farmers are really cutting edge in terms of sustainability. So that's the theme that runs through the book. Mm-hmm. But it's really, you know, a cookbook that celebrates everything that California grows.
Mm-hmm. Now, would you say it was your recipes or your wine knowledge that first interested you in compiling this book?
Well, gosh, it would be hard to tease those apart, but I think I come at it a little bit more from the food side than from the wine side. That's just my, you know, my strength. I'm a daily wine drinker, but I'm, you know, I consider myself a food writer first and foremost.
Okay.
So, but it was, you know, so fun to be able to put the two together and to get a lot more knowledgeable in the research phase of the book about how California wines are made. It was kind of a road trip, honestly. I consider it sort of a foodie road trip that I got to take from north to south in California, visiting wine growers and produce growers and getting to tell their stories.
Yeah. Now, who decided the wineries? Because I'm a beer gal, I don't really, I don't know that many wineries except for the ones in the book, Cake Bread, which I was surprised to see was someone's last name, and Coppola. But how did the wineries get decided?
Well, the wineries are meant to represent a range of sizes and styles and, most important, geographic areas.
Right.
So California is roughly divided into 15 major wine-growing areas. There's a winery representing each of those 15 wine-growing areas. Some of them you probably have heard of, like Cake Bread and Coppola, but others I think many people, including myself, have not heard of because they're small and maybe not even distributed outside of the state, but they are key figures in their region in terms of being models of sustainable practices.
Okay. So it was mostly sustainable practices that got the wineries in the book?
Yes,
and
representing
location.
A range of styles and varieties.
Okay.
I wanted to show, you know, growers who grow Cabernet, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, all the significant varieties that are grown in California, and also some who are, you know, growing some of the more, you know, kind of cutting-edge varieties.
Unique. Okay.
Yeah.
Now the book.
That, you know, there's like Larry Turley, who's growing Old Vine Zinfandel in the Sierra Foothills, and then, of course, the fabulous Pinot Noir producers on the Central Coast, all the way down to Temecula in Southern California.
Now, this book is large and heavy. It's got so many gorgeous pictures of wineries, of grapes, of fruit, of recipes, 300 pictures, some full-page spreads. If it was a coffee table book, it would make everyone thirsty and hungry.
Well, I hope, yeah, it is. It's gorgeous.
Yes.
There were two photographers on it, one who specializes in food and people, that's Sarah Remington, and then Bob Holmes, who specializes in vineyard and winery photography. So it took two photographers to get this together, but I hope people will take it into the kitchen. I want to see it dirty. I want to see people's greasy fingers on it, because it really is a cookbook.
Well, that's great. You know, I was searching for something to cook this evening, and I'd found one of your chicken recipes, and it was pretty easy. And then I couldn't remember where it was. So I searched my whole house for the chicken recipe, and I didn't remember it was in your book.
Oh, this is such a delicious recipe, and it's a...
The one with the spices?
I think it's going to become a favorite weeknight recipe for a lot of people. Or
yes.
Even, you know, a dinner party dish, because it's so easy and it's foolproof.
Yeah.
I make it with Meyer lemons, which are a California specialty, but...
I got some.
Have you had Meyer lemons?
I don't know if I've had them. Are they in between lemons and oranges?
In terms of their scent and their flavor, yes. They're not as tart as a regular lemon.
Mm-hmm.
They're not as sweet as an orange.
Mm-hmm.
They have an orange-like fragrance. So if you can't get the Meyers, I have made the recipe myself with a mixture of lemons and oranges.
Oh, cool.
And you put the chicken on top. The chicken has a really nice rub with dried oregano, Spanish pimenton, the smoked paprika, olive oil, garlic powder, and it goes on that bed of citrus and sliced red onions. And the chicken juices just drip down into that base and mix with the citrus juices. And I put some green olives around it, so that adds some yet another flavor and texture. And it bakes in one dish in 40 minutes. And
it sounds
five
so easy. I can't wait.
Yeah, you're gonna love it.
So anyway, what happened first? Were the wineries selected first?
The wineries and the farms.
Okay.
And there, with the farms, too, the effort was made to show all of California from from north to south, and the breadth of things that we grow. So, finding farmers that represented that diversity, that had good stories to tell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was so struck by how many of these farms are multi-generational.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the third, fourth, fifth, or even in one case, sixth generation.
Yes, I was too.
Yeah, so that's a beautiful story, that there are still young people who are willing to stay on the farm, eager to make this a way of life and raise their families on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, I loved seeing that. That, of course, is the definition of sustainability.
Right,
being sustained to the next generation by really responsible farming, making sure that you're passing on something that's even better than what you inherited.
Now, were you there for all the picture taking?
No, I wasn't there for any of the picture taking.
Oh,
the photographer
too bad.
And I were never there at the same time. I visited all these. I visited all these farms and wineries, and had a lengthy.
Did you visit
with them,
first?
But it was.
Did
never
you
at
visit
the same
first?
Time. Usually I went first, so that I could give the photographer some sense of what to
expect,
what to photograph. This was my think, my 30th book.
Mm-hmm.
And the designer is something, she's done dozens of books, and we both would say this is the most complicated book we ever worked on because we had to coordinate with all these, you know, vintners, grape growers, mm-hmm. produce growers.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to be there during the harvest season. We wanted
right.
to be there, you know, at different times of the year. So it took a lot of
yeah.
engineering. There were a whole lot of Excel spreadsheets involved in this book.
I'm sure. Now,
and
how
the right,
long?
The right farm at the right time.
How long did the research take you, the drive through, and how long did the picture taking take?
Well, the whole project was, you know, I think start to finish, the whole project was about 3 years. I
mm-hmm.
had 2 years,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
is very generous. I rarely have that much time on a manuscript.
Mm-hmm.
But I had 2 years and needed it because
you were learning different things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and you always, as a food writer, you really want to have a minimum of a year because you want to get the produce in peak season
mm-hmm.
to test with.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
There's
right.
nothing worse than trying to test a pear recipe with pears out of season or figs out of season.
I found myself
yeah.
learning accidentally as I read and realizing how little I know about wine. But
you have a fun education ahead of you.
Yes, yes, yes. Definitely.
The more you drink, the more you know.
Yeah. Now, what is the percentage of sustainable wineries in California? Are there some that are not sustainable, and are those cheap or bad wines?
Well, no, I don't know the percentage, actually, of certified sustainable, but I know it's large and growing. There's
mm-hmm.
actually a certification
mm-hmm.
program now, so a winery can apply to get certified, and the... it's not an easy process. They
mm-hmm.
have to
mm-hmm.
self-assess in a lot of categories.
Mm-hmm.
And compared to, say, organic, where it's just a question of are you using the right, you know, are you not using certain compounds on your farm,
mm-hmm.
Sustainability is a much bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do more with not only, you know, your... farming practices, but
it could have to do with water and
cutting back on water. You're cutting back on energy.
Yeah,
are you a good member of your community?
Right.
So it's a bigger.
It's
endeavor.
More complicated. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, a broader. And I would say it's definitely a growing number of wineries that are certified sustainable. And as of sometime within the last year, they can now start putting that on their label.
Okay. Now, is sustainable farms for fruit different?
Yes, in the sense that the sustainability certification that I just described is for wineries and grape growers only.
Mm-hmm.
It's a program that the Wine Institute, the Trade Association for the Wineries, oversees.
Instituted. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know of a certification program
for fruit.
For fruit or vegetables.
Oh, okay.
But certainly
okay.
I saw a lot of the same attitudes and practices when I visited California's fruit and vegetable growers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, that attempt to really minimize water use, find alternative energy sources,
mm-hmm.
You know, come up with programs for employee well-being. And,
right. There was a lot of that written about in the book. I thought that was great.
Yeah, I encountered some really heartwarming stories about how much
the wineries care
really value
about
their
employees
and put that into, you know, into action.
I
remember visiting one wine grower in the Sierra Foothills, Larry Turley
mm-hmm.
Wine Cellars. He's
mm-hmm.
quite he's a cult figure,
uh-huh.
and he has pledged to put all of his employees' children, if they need it, he will pay their state their tuition at a state school,
oh,
state
wow.
college.
Wow!
And he's done that for four people already, and
mm-hmm.
he told me that there are about 28 more who qualify, and he stands ready to send them all through college.
That's excellent. That's excellent.
Yeah.
Now, this is just a specific question. There are old vines from Gold Rush days?
Oh, only a handful. only a handful.
Is that dry farming?
From Gold Rush days, maybe. I can only think of one vineyard where they would say they had vines that old.
Okay.
But
okay.
Certainly there are vines that are 100 years old.
Right. And they look very gnarly and crazy.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. You have to see these. They're beautiful. They have these very thick, gnarly arms. They're what's called head pruned. They're not trained up on a trellis like a lot of the vines people are familiar with.
Yes.
They are left to sprawl,
mm-hmm.
but they're pruned very carefully and mm-hmm. into kind of a wagon wheel shape.
Mm-hmm.
If you looked at them from above, you would see the spokes of a wagon wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is to space out the fruit and let light and air,
mm-hmm.
Sunlight and, mm-hmm. and air enter. So this was an early way of pruning grapevines
mm-hmm.
that minimized, it minimized disease because mm-hmm. it kept the sunlight on the fruit and it kept the breezes moving through the vines.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, your book seems to favor gnarly.
Well, maybe that's more romantic. That's maybe what the photographers consider more romantic. Vines get that way. You know, after
right.
2 or 3 or 4 years, they do develop thick trunks and,
right.
and thick arms. That's just the natural progression.
Uh-huh.
A 10-year-old vine's going to look somewhat like that.
Okay. Now, I thought it was also interesting that Ari from Zingerman's was in the book because he trained a bunch of the vineyards with his open book finances.
I loved hearing that story, too, because, you know, as a cheese lover, being in the cheese world, I've known Ari for a
right.
long time.
Right.
And I didn't know that he was a consultant to Domaine Carneros,
right.
which is one of the wineries right. near where I live.
Mm-hmm.
They're a great sparkling wine producer. And Eileen Crane, who is the manager, longtime GM at mm-hmm. Domaine Carneros,
mm-hmm.
CEO, invited, I think maybe she had read Ari's book, and she invited him to come consult
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about open book management, and she adopted it.
Mm-hmm.
And he and his team have done a lot of seminars and workshops there for the staff related to, you know, energy and
yeah.
Team huddles and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Eileen is a very conservative kind of proper person.
Uh-huh.
She's like the last person I ever would have thought would go after this kind of...
This newfangled thing.
This new way of thinking. But she has totally embraced it. And,
oh, that's so great.
And says it has been great for employee morale.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we have to take a break. We'll be back with Janet Flesher talking about Wine Country Table. We'll be back soon.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Conte Cheese Association. Conte Cheese Association represents the Conte PDO, Conte Protected Designation of Origin in the USA. Conte is a raw milk cooked pressed cheese from the Jura Mountains of France. There, every day, 2,500 family farms deliver milk to over 150 local cheesemaking facilities, or fruitiers. This milk must be transformed into Conte within 24 hours of milking to preserve the lactic microflora in the milk, ensuring the cheese's aromatic potential. About 105 gallons of milk are required to craft a single wheel of Conte. Conte takes time to acquire its flavors in the affinage cellars. After 8 months of aging by dedicated affineur on average, each wheel of Conte is graded and shipped to market. No wheel of Conte is the same. Its flavors speak to the pastures where the cows grazed, the season in which it was made, the particular craftsmanship of the cheesemaker, and the time spent in the aging cellar. Therefore, every wheel of Conte is unique. Learn more about Conte, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at conte-usa.com. That's conte-usa.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more.
My name is Dana Cowan, and I'm the host of Speaking Broadly here on HRN. Every week, I conduct intimate interviews with the brilliant, powerful women in the food world. We discuss their lives, their careers, and the ways in which they navigate the world at large. You can find Speaking Broadly wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, Janet. We're back.
Hi, Diane.
Okay, so I have two big questions. Were you writing the book before most of the fires in California?
Yes. I mean, we've had wildfires the last 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, we have fires every year, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah.
But I think the fires you're referring to were the last 2 years, so the answer is yes.
Did they affect any of the wineries from the book or other wineries?
Not in the sense of
burning vines.
Vines I can't recall, actually. I don't think any of our featured wineries were affected
hurt.
Dramatically.
Okay.
You know, the thing about grapevines is they really don't burn.
Oh.
They're full of water.
Oh.
And so here in Napa, I mean, the fire came very close to my home and the vineyards where my husband worked, and the vines didn't burn, just the areas around them. The fire would come right up to the vineyards and then stop.
Scary. Very scary. Yeah. And my second question is that now that more and more people are, you know, quote, believing in global warming, how does that affect a winery or even an AVA, a viticultural area, if I'm pronouncing that right? Will the wrong vines be in the wrong place?
Well, it's a very good question. A lot of wineries, or I would say the enlightened wineries, are starting to think about that.
Yeah.
And think about whether they need to look at different varieties than the ones they have been growing. Maybe varieties that can, you know, take more heat. So there is some talk of that. There's some experimenting going on with different varieties in different places. It's an issue. And, of course, this extreme weather that we're having will probably continue.
Yeah.
We're having a lot of rain this year in California, which we're not, you know, not accustomed to. And
Is that doing bad things and good things?
Well, it's so, you know, mostly good. It kind of replenishes the aquifer, and it comes at a time when the vines are dormant. Mm-hmm. We don't want it now because the vines are starting to bud out, and you certainly don't want hail or anything, you know, dramatic now, or you could harm the crop.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just really glad I'm not doing this, that I'm not growing grapes or growing, you know, figs or olives or anything, because you're at the mercy of Mother Nature all the time. And I think we don't realize how much stress these farms and grape growers go through being at the mercy of Mother Nature.
And Mother Nature is getting angrier and angrier. So
we're
all in big trouble.
On the other hand, she, you know, throws us some nice curveballs, too, when we have good years. And I think for every crop that California produces, there is a sweet spot in California. This state has such geographic diversity and climatic diversity. I mean, everybody thinks of California as warm and sunny, but there are parts of California that are quite cool and coastal, foggy a lot, and there are crops that do well there and grapes that do well there. So there's a place for everything.
Right. Well, that was one of the things I was learning in the book, how big California is. You don't realize it, even though it's big on the map, and how different it is, how there's, you know, like one statistic, 10% of the whole country's farmland is in the inland valleys of California, but 25% of its food.
Yeah, and I didn't see this statistic until I think after the book was finished. But speaking of that Inland Valley,
yeah,
which is the Sacramento Valley and the mm-hmm. San Joaquin Valley, mm-hmm. collectively we call that the Central Valley.
Okay.
They grow 250 different crops in that valley.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything from very familiar things like peaches and nectarines and mm-hmm. canning tomatoes mm-hmm. to Asian herbs, Asian vegetables, Southeast Asian specialties.
Mm-hmm.
It's an extremely diverse mm-hmm. Picture.
Yeah, yeah. At one point, one of your quotes in the book is, "Adventuresome cooks in ingredient heaven."
That sounds like me. Yeah, really, we do have a remarkable market basket of produce to play with. Mm-hmm. Everything from the avocados and kumquats of this, Southern California, the hot valleys down there, mm-hmm. to the baby lettuces that mm-hmm. are grown in the cool climate of Northern California. One of my favorite visits of the whole book mm-hmm. was to a cut flower grower in San Diego, in the desert in San Diego, up in the hills. It's, mm-hmm. Diane, you cannot believe this landscape. It is rocky, dry. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't believe that anything could come out of there.
And they're growing flowers?
Proteas, yeah, a type of South African flower.
Oh, cool.
That florists, it's a very trendy flower now. It's in a lot of bridal bouquets. And you'll recognize them if mm-hmm. you look them up.
Uh-huh.
They are getting them to grow in the desert with no water,
mm-hmm.
Virtually no fertilizer, and it's a whole big business, mm-hmm. the cut flower mm-hmm. business in there, and it's a sustainable segment of agriculture.
Uh-huh.
They're growing
uh-huh.
something where nothing else would grow.
Right, right. Now, there was you talk about Herringer Estates, six generations of farmers. And they went from dairy cows to tomatoes to wine grapes?
Yeah, they're in a part of California that is not the first one on everybody's lips when you're thinking of wine and wine grapes. It's called Clarksburg.
Mm-hmm.
And for the longest time, Clarksburg was an area that grew grapes and then just sold them to other people, like Gallo, where the grapes mm-hmm. would just disappear into a blend.
Mm-hmm.
But now Clarksburg is its own AVA. And people are putting that Clarksburg on their label and making wines that really merit
mm-hmm.
Being, bottled on their own. And mm-hmm. Herringer, I think they pronounce it, is one of those families that has transitioned mm-hmm. from just selling their grapes to others to making their own branded wine.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Now, I also found out asparagus grows for 15 years.
Yeah, I guess asparagus grows from a mass of roots called
mm-hmm.
a crown,
mm-hmm.
and one crown can probably last about 15 years if you take good care of it.
Mm-hmm.
The fact about asparagus that so astonished me is that those spears can grow 6 inches in a day on a warm day.
Really? And then they have
yeah.
to be picked and that day?
Well, so the crews will go through multiple times
uh-huh.
Because you pass through on Monday and there might be 6 spears to pick out of that crown.
Mm-hmm.
You pass by on Wednesday and there's another 6 spears. So you have to, over the period of about 6 weeks.
So they just grow.
Go through those farms again and again and again.
That is so cool.
To harvest.
Now,
they take this very long, it's like almost like a long, very long fork,
mm-hmm.
and they plunge it into the ground, and they mm-hmm. cut the asparagus down underground
mm-hmm.
and lift up the spear.
Mm. Okay. Now, the recipes, they seemed mostly easy to me as not a good cook because they are so ingredient-bound. Would you say that's true?
I would say that's absolutely true. I really am an ingredient-driven cook more than a mm-hmm. technique-driven cook.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always thinking about the home cook.
Yeah, thankfully.
And what he or she is willing to do. So, I think I'm not the kind of cook who's going to go buy 6 different herbs and use a tablespoon of each.
Mm-hmm. Right,
I would say the recipes are streamlined,
yes.
but super tasty.
Mm-hmm.
One I'm making right now is a an olive oil cake. Mm-hmm. I did visit an olive oil producer in California who's making superb extra virgin olive oil. The mm-hmm. name is Enzo, E-N-Z-O.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a cake with his olive oil instead of melted butter.
Mm-hmm.
And it has orange peel in it and a lot of toasted almond.
Mm.
And it's just a fabulous cake to have with any kind of fruit, strawberries,
mm-hmm.
bush, you know, raspberries mm-hmm. later in the year,
mm-hmm.
peaches, nectarines, figs, pears.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a great all-purpose cake.
Mm-hmm.
And I made that just last weekend.
Oh, okay.
And it's a nice little cake to have with a little glass of wine.
Yes. Now, I was getting hungrier when I came across old-fashioned chocolate sheet cake with Bing cherry sauce.
Yeah, the cherries are about 2 months away.
Oh, okay, so not yet.
But, yeah, that's a wonderful cake. It came from a friend. It's her grandmother's recipe. It's just an old-fashioned sheet cake. And would the sheet cake cherry sauce or raspberry sauce later in the summer.
Would the sheet cake be good enough by itself?
Well, yes, but of course I want to get some California fruit in there. But it would be great with a Zinfandel port, you know, a dessert
mm-hmm.
wine
mm-hmm.
Of some type. Right now it might be nice to serve with some kind of poached fruit.
Mm-hmm.
There's not much... Not that much fresh fruit in the market right now.
Now, I found also interesting, University of California at Santa Cruz. I went there one summer when I was in college. And so it's near and dear to my heart. And it says it's AVA stands alone. It's like small? The Santa Cruz AVA?
Sure. I know what you're talking about. I know you at University of Santa Cruz, UC Santa Cruz.
Yes.
Is a, they were pioneers.
Yes.
In sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the, you know, early 80s, they were preaching sustainability and teaching it to their students. They had
mm-hmm.
a farm program. They still do have a program that teaches people how to farm sustainably.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know about an AVA that the school would have.
I feel like I wrote down Santa Cruz AVA stands alone. Why did I write that down? I can't remember.
I don't know, but I'm going to go back and look it up.
Okay.
Refresh my memory. They may have. It would surprise me if they had their own AVA. Santa Cruz, of course, has an AVA.
Mm-hmm.
That area is pretty cool
mm-hmm.
Along
yes.
the coast.
Yes.
That's where a lot of our artichokes come from, and
mm-hmm.
Brussels sprouts and fava beans.
Is Cupertino the artichoke capital of the world?
No, Cupertino is Silicon Valley. It's
oh.
the computer capital.
Oh, no, but, it used to be. I'm thinking like 30 years ago.
Oh, Castroville right. is the town you're thinking
oh,
of.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yeah. I've driven around Northern California many times, and I misplace my memory.
They're not
anyway,
far apart.
So what was your basic... learning experience from writing this book?
So many. But I learned a lot of little kind of fun trivia about mm-hmm. fruits and vegetables.
Yes.
But I learned, I think, mostly that so many of these grape growers and produce growers they're just amazingly forward-thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in the back of my mind, I thought of farmers as being kind of
old-fashioned?
Conservative, old-fashioned. They wear overalls. You know, they don't change very quickly. But that is the opposite of
oh,
the
that's
truth
interesting.
On California farms.
Uh-huh.
If you're that way, you are falling behind.
Mm-hmm.
If you're standing still, you're falling behind in California because you have to be thinking ahead.
Right.
And I mean, not only in terms of what you're going to grow, you know, what's the next new crop, but how can you embrace technology
mm-hmm.
in a way that allows you to grow your crop with less water?
Right.
Grow
Be
your
more
crop
sustainable.
With, you know, fewer herbicides
mm-hmm.
or pesticides.
Mm-hmm.
There are solutions out there, but you have to be, you know, open to them.
Right.
And
interested. You have to. Sometimes you have to seek them out. But it that came across so well in the book, how forward-thinking these people were.
Yeah, it's true. And a lot of them are using, these super high-tech methods that, like, soil moisture monitoring devices mm-hmm. that tell you exactly mm-hmm. when a vine needs to be irrigated and how much, mm-hmm. So that the water is applied almost drop by drop in just the right place.
Right.
It's brought right. way down the mm-hmm. use of water mm-hmm. In vineyards and orchards.
Mm-hmm. Which is great for California because there's not enough water, right?
It will always be a scarce resource. Yeah. In years like this where we've had a good rainfall, consumers can forget it. And we start wasting water again and taking uh-huh. longer showers.
Right.
But farmers never forget it,
right.
that those wounds of the drought years really are burned in their memory, and they do not for a moment believe mm-hmm. that we will ever in California be out of a true drought situation. This
right.
is a dry state, and water
right.
will always be an issue. That's why it's just so important to... to support these sustainable farms and, mm-hmm. Seek them out and pat them on the back.
Yeah, yeah. And your book does that so well. I want to thank you so much for being on the show again. I really enjoyed the book, and I recommend everyone go buy it, Wine Country Table.
Thank you, Diane. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without the support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.